China de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur, Denis Jilamujian, para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
Bye. got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundación Xaquiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
Mishola Jackson, bence söyleyeceklerimi ya dinle ya boş ver.
And as soon as I learned to tell time, I no longer listened. I was born at 12:30 in the morning. By 1 a.m. I was certain that I would no longer remember my past. By 1:40 I had forgotten my name. By 2:12 the ancients had bid me farewell. By 2:30 I had swallowed a foreign brand. By 2:40 I had begun to hallucinate. It's all coming back to me. It's all coming back to me. I met my parents' spirit guides at 4:30. It was they who told me of the sun. It was not what I expected. It only seemed to hint at light. I met my parents' spirit guides at 4:30. It was they who told me of the sun. It was not what I expected. It only seemed to hint at light. By 6:17, I had decided what I wanted to be. By 6:18, I discovered my shell. At 6:19, I began the process of dying. At 7 o'clock, I made an attempt to be perfectly still and jumped when I felt my soul fidget. I jumped when I felt my soul fidget.
When we first organized the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense, he would say, Bobby, he says, we're going to draw up a basic platform, just basic, that black people can read. He says, we don't want to go real elaborate with all these essays and dissertations and all this stuff, because the brother going to look at that and he can say, man, I ain't got time for that. I got to go see what I can do for myself. He said, just a basic platform that the mothers who struggle hard to raise us, that the fathers who worked hard, that the young brothers in school who come out of school semi-illiterate. He would say, we want freedom, we want power to determine the destiny of our black community. Full employment for our people.
To see, and when I look in my window, so many different people to be, that it's strange, so strange. You got to pick up every stitch, you got to pick up every
You got to pick up every stitch. sitting in a crowded apartment, about 110 degrees. I went outside the middle of the night. All I had was a match in my hand. I wanted to fight, so I said, burn, baby, burn. Secretary said it wasn't now. I tried to get in touch with Mr. Humphrey. He couldn't find him anywhere. I went into the courtroom with my poor black feet. Didn't have no money, didn't have no lawyer. They wouldn't plead my case. So I said, burn, David, burn.
That's underneath my boat. Mr. Medgar Evers from Jackson. He's the state field secretary for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Mr. Medgar Evers.
Thank you very much, Mr. McDo. Ladies and gentlemen, it's very good to see the number of persons out here tonight that are. And certainly this indicates that we are ready for freedom and we are ready to march for it. Yeah. I just want to say to you here tonight that the reason I'm up here is because you have given us inspiration in Jackson. And we're going to go back to Jackson, South Mississippi, and all over Mississippi and fight for freedom as you're fighting for it here in Greenwood. All we want you to do is keep going with this fight for freedom. And as we stick together here, as you feel the pains of dogs here in Greenwood, we'll feel them in Jackson. And if we feel them in Jackson, you feel them here. And when we get this unity, ladies and gentlemen, nothing can stop us. We're going to win this fight for freedom. Thank you very much.
My latest sun is sinking fast. My race is nearly run. My strongest trials now are past. My triumph has begun.
Oh, come, angel friend. To my immortal.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules.
So, coming up next on the stream of freakradio.org, it's Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides, the October 5th, 2023 edition. And this one is a total flashback from December 22nd, 1995, with a few edits because, candidly, the sound at some points is a little distorted. I removed some of the music and tried to replace it with music you could actually hear and not wince at. But there are some vocal parts of, I should say, some voices in the argument and the discussion and the controversy. This is mainly a long interview with former Mayor Mike Rotkin after the closing of the Back 40s open-air shelter, which had serviced several hundred people and was closed by the Citizens Committee for the exploitation of the homeless, as I called them then. But, of course, they also did some good things. They called themselves the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, but you have to pursue this stuff further with other interviews and other stuff I've written if you want to get into at least my opinions on this. You'll have various speakers coming in who are questioning this. We had a phone line in those days in the studio. You have Bob LaMonica. You have Celine Pascal, who wrote The Public Response to Homelessness, 1989 and 1994. I guess it was her PhD thesis, perhaps, at one of the local, maybe the UCSC. And Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who led SOS, Save Our Shelters, which was the group, kind of the organized group that tried to stave off the shutting of the open-air shelter, which drove so many into the bushes and out into the rain and out into the bad conditions. Although Mayor Rotkin and his second in this project, former Mayor Scott Kennedy, assisted him in, they got some money to send, I think, 20 or 30 homeless people out to New Brighton Beach for a couple of weeks. But, of course, that didn't keep the promises of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which claimed it was going to allow the encampment to continue until January 1st or whenever their project, which was the community house, which was later situated on that site, I think a year later. They had no need to actually immediately vacate it, but they just decided to do that. And that's for people like Daryl Darling and Paige Smith. I don't know if he was still around, but Paul Lee, who died recently as well. People who had actually been voices against the sleeping ban, the criminalization of the homeless, and who tried to provide a little kind of respite at some points on their property, but who really didn't want to challenge the authorities in the more direct way that I think might have actually had some impact and actually saved numerous lives and certainly helped a lot of people. But that's just my outside view. You can take your own view. Rotkin defends the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban law, Municipal Code 6.36, which is still on the books, though significantly altered with the removal of the word sleeping, but is still impacting anybody who rests or has to carry their stuff around. And It has a lot of references to shelter and storage, which is supposed to immunize it from legal challenge under the Martin versus Boise court decision, which has had a fundamental role in protecting homeless folks in different places, at least temporarily, until the authorities learn new tricks, which is something they're developing, unfortunately, rather quickly. Anyway, here's Mike Rotkin. I call him Motormouth Mike, although perhaps I do most of the talking. Battling Bob LaMonica, Celine Pascal, I don't know if I had a nickname for her, and Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. Mostly me and Rotkin to start with, but probably a few other voices as well. And also, here's a little from Les Miserables to begin with.
As up to down, the sections are prepared. From the back to training at the Lee, students work as everyone. There's a river of the run, like the flowing of a tide. Harry's coming to our side.
The time is near. So near, it's stirring the blood in their veins, and yet beware. Don't let the wine go to your brains.
For the army we fight is a dangerous foe, with the men in the arms that we never could match. Oh, it's easy to sit here and swat them like flies, but the National Guard will be harder to catch. We need a sign to rally the people, to call them to us, to bring them in line.
A proper actor, we have all the guns, we can't bear. Our time is running short. Grantaire, put that bottle down. Do we have the guns we need?
Give me brandy on my breath, and I'll breathe them all to death.
And send the one that with us to a man.
Notre Dame, the tearing of the stone.
When he arrives,
he rounds for every man.
General Mark is dead.
Lamarck is dead. Lamarck, his death is the hour of fate. The people's man. His death is the sign we await.
On his funeral day, they will honor his name. It's a rallying cry that will reach every ear. In the death of Lamarck, we will kindle the flame. They will see that the day of salvation is near. The time is here. Let us welcome him gladly with courage and cheer. Let us take to the streets with no doubt in our hearts. But a jubilant shout, they will come on and on. They will come on with us.
Do you hear the people sing? Singing the song of angry men. It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes.
Will you join in our crusade? Who will be strong? To be free.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a light about to stop and tomorrow comes.
Will you hear what you can hear?
Blood of the martyrs will water the metal of the drums.
106.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And for the next 2 hours, you'll be listening to Bathrobe Spiel's Broadsides, a show concerning itself with civil rights for the poor in the shelters, on the streets, and wherever you happen to be in Santa Cruz, in California, and across the nation. My in-studio guest today will be Mayor Mike Rotkin. We'll also be having Dan Hopkins, who's a camper from the New Brighton Beach campground, previously from the open-air shelter in Santa Cruz, and Celine Pascal, who will be moderating with me in this special edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We have our first live politician on the air here, and it's quite an occasion. Let's see if we got your mic working, Mike.
Matestas here. This is Mike Rockin, the mayor of Santa Cruz. Are we coming through? Sounds like we are.
I think we are coming through.
Good.
Mike, you initially wanted to make, you noticed this rally for Holiday Inn workers slated for Friday, December 29th, and you pointed out that that had been canceled and there have been some changes in that situation. Can you kind of give a brief update on that?
Yes, so I don't know how it works. People are of this issue, but there's a gentleman, Solomon Saif, who owns a number of hotels and has his office, I guess, now in Foster City at a Holiday Inn up there, is contemplating buying the Holiday Inn from Charles Canfield, the Seaside Company that owns it right now. And there were rumors flying around that he was considering simply laying off all the existing workers and hiring people, new people, at a much lower wage and perhaps even without benefits. And as a result, the Hotel and Restaurant Workers Union went out gathering letters from public officials and individuals and gathered apparently 1,000 signatures from people in Santa Cruz on a petition saying that they would boycott the new hotel if the rumors were true. And at this point, Mr. Tsai decided to extend his escrow for another month into the end of January to further consider whether he really wants to purchase it, given what's going on in Santa Cruz and our pro-union penchant down here. But also, basically, both sides now are saying that they were willing to have conversations to talk about possibly working out some kind of a new contract and make things happen.
Closer to the mic.
Both sides are saying that they're trying to work something out, so I'm optimistic. I think it would not serve our town well to have to destroy the current union there and have the kind of boycott we've had there in the past. And so at this point, I'm hopeful that we'll have some discussions. And in any case, the rally that was scheduled for this next Friday has actually been canceled because I think people are going to at least make another effort at trying to work this thing out before we reach that stage.
Let me ask you while you're here. I guess this is a question I hadn't really thought of, but the Canfield's Seaside Corporation, what's the unionization situation down there, and what's the stance of the city toward that corporation?
Well, it's a non-union shop for at least most of the workers. There may be some union folks that work there, but the majority of workers are non-union. In the past, there was an attempt to organize on the part of the workers. This was actually when I was the mayor last time in 1985 and 86. And the city joined in a boycott while that union effort was going on. Eventually, the workers were defeated in that attempt, and the boycott was eventually called off. Just as, you know, I think ineffective boycotts, this is my own personal view, that ineffective boycotts are not are difficult to sustain. You either have them well organized and you really kick some butt and people understand that you're bringing economic pressure against them, or it's the kind of moral attempt to sort of individually boycott. It's an individual decision people can make, but it doesn't necessarily work real well. So the city eventually removed the boycott when the union itself backed off and the Central Labor Council removed their strike sanction. Mm-hmm. So that's, we don't win them all. That was one that we didn't win. And basically, Mr. Canfield generally has an anti-union position, and since it has an effect on so many jobs in Santa Cruz, I think it has an overall depressing effect on wages in the community. So I wish that were not his position. And, basically, we can't organize people for them. They have to organize themselves. And at this point, obviously, I would support any attempt of the people there to get unionized and to get the kind of rights and benefits that people get when they get organized.
How big is Canfield in Santa Cruz? I mean, what kind of economic power does he wield?
Well, there was a time in the past when the Seaside Company, not just Mr. Canfield, but the Seaside Company generally, was probably the biggest economic game in town. This was before the university came, or in the first several years after the university came in the late 60s, early 70s. I think that's not the case anymore. He still owns about half of the land. His corporation owns about half the land in the Beach Flats area. And obviously the boardwalk is a major employer in the summer months. So it's he's a significant player in Santa Cruz in terms of economic kinds of issues, but it's no longer a one one company town as it might have been in the past. There's a lot of other things going on that actually bring more money into the community than the Seaside Company. We are a tourist town, so it's certainly what happens at the beach is a big draw, and the Seaside Company itself, I think, and the boardwalk tends to draw people to town. So I would say, you know, he's a very significant economic player, but no longer, you know, somebody who runs Santa Cruz, as perhaps was the case in the past.
Mm-hmm. I want to remind our guests, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I was chided by a friend who told me that I was not announcing the on-air number enough. So here it is. It's 427-3772. This is a call-in show. Our show is for you to call in to talk to us and let us know what you think. That's almost more important than what we're saying, because I'm here every week. Mike has a forum at the City Council. You can hear us when you wish, but we can't hear you unless you call in to tell us what you have to say. If you have questions for me or for Mike on any subject we've been discussing or other subjects, do give a call to 427-FRSC, 427-3772. Our lines are currently open. So, kind of concluding on this Holiday Inn situation here, do you think that there's a likelihood of a repeat of 1986 in terms of you as a city council member seeking a boycott, or to support a boycott, or to support a strike? Or, I mean, what do you see as in the cards, or as, at least in terms of possibilities for people to consider?
I guess I'm not really great at making predictions about where the future is going to go. I tend to be an optimistic person by nature, and so my hope is that this will work out and we won't be forced to that kind of a boycott. I think the people of the city of Santa Cruz, both union members, activists, you know, within the Central Labor Council, and just the general community, tend to support labor boycotts in town. And if one is, you know, forced into place, I think it'll definitely be an effective one. But my hope is that this can be worked out. It doesn't serve any of us to have long boycotts. The first thing people see, tourists see when they drive into town along Ocean Street, with, you know, being a bunch of pickets out in front of the largest hotel in that area. So my hope is it doesn't come to it. And I can't predict. You know, we'll see where it goes. At this point, both sides are saying they're willing to talk, and that's a good start.
When you were elected mayor in 1986, I believe it was either a 4-3 or a 5-2, I think it was a 4-3 majority that the progressives had. There was Marty Wormhout, John Laird, you, and Bruce Van Allen on the council.
Actually, at that point, it was Jim Reed had replaced Bruce Van Allen by 85.
Ah, yes, thank you.
In the 83 election, Bruce was replaced by Jane.
That was a significant election, I remember, because I think as a consequence of a court decision in that election, Attorney Ray Green I tried to get homeless voters the right to vote by registering at their great, so to speak, or wherever they were. Santa Cruz doesn't have greats, of course, but their park bench, wherever they happen to be lodging sort of en route as they were being shuffled around into the camping van. And he failed, although the voters up at UCSC, who conservatives challenged had, because they'd voted for Jane Reed, and there'd been some question about their residency, were allowed to vote. And then a year later, or 2 years later, in Santa Barbara, we were able to secure the vote for homeless people at arbitrary addresses, essentially. You just needed an address, and then you could state where you were. You needed an address to send mail, and then you could state where you happened to be, whether it was a tree or wherever the heck it happened to be.
I mean, the UCSC issue got complicated because people were registering not where they lived, namely their dorm room, but at their mailbox at the campus, and the decision was that that was inappropriate. Several of the people who were registering at the mailbox actually lived in apartments downtown or in other parts of the community, and the court actually decided that the people who really lived on the campus and had mailboxes there, that was okay, that those folks were legal votes, but the ones who had been registering at a mailbox on campus and, you know, subsequently had moved somewhere downtown since they left the dorms, those votes were discounted. And as a result, the election was brought much closer, but Jane Reed still won the election. It didn't affect the outcome in the final count.
Now, those were kind of heady days for homeless activists, both nationally and locally. You were, of course, involved in the controversy around the opening of the first cold and rainy night shelter, the Cedar Street shelter and Peter Carolla's shelter, which happened as a function, in my reading of history, because of the hunger strike of Jane Immer after 6 months of organizing protests before the County Board of Supervisors and urging action by the city-county task force. Do you have any recollections of that period that you wish to share with us and perhaps diverge from mine or support mine?
Well, I think There's a series of events that are all what sociologists would call overdetermined. Lots of different things played into the final outcome. I think Jane Elmer's hunger strike was definitely an influence on Paul Lee and Paige Smith, who subsequently formed the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, or CCH, and they opened up the first, it wasn't the first, Peter Corotta had already opened another, but opened one of the early shelters in downtown Santa Cruz on Cedar Street. I think, again, largely affected or influenced by the hunger strike that Jane was involved in. At the same time, the city itself was beginning to try and figure out what can we do more in the way of providing health services and other services for homeless people. So I think there was a convergence of a couple of different efforts. So I think it's always a mistake in history to sort of attribute what happens to one person or one thing, but certainly Jane Elmer's hunger strike played a key role in influencing the Citizens Committee's formation, the first shelter. As a result of the Citizens Committee opening that first shelter on Cedar Street, the city began looking for some other kind of a site that might be successful as a more permanent location for shelter services, and that's through that process, as I was mayor, working with some of the local business leaders, some of the social service activists and others to locate the corner of River Street and Highway 1, where a number of homeless services exist today, the day shelter, or Santa Cruz Community Resource Center, Homeless Resource Center, County Mental Health Program, the River Street Shelter, temporary open air campground, which I'm sure we'll be talking about some more, and so forth. And so I think Jane did play a role in it, but it would be a mistake to say she did it all or something. And she, of course, never would have claimed that for herself. She just played, she took an act, and I think it made a difference.
Yeah, I again want to encourage our listeners, if you have any thoughts on what Mike is saying, what I'm saying, you're listening to Mayor Mike Rotkin and me, Bathrop Spear Robert, here on the Bathrop Spear's Broadsides, give a call to 427-3772. We can use some input from some outcasts or possibly just some ordinary folks downtown who have access to telephones. You can give us a call, 427-3772. And we're kind of starting on a low key here, trying to perhaps work into the more controversial aspects of what we're going to be talking about. Mike and I have had severe disagreements in the past and attacked each other savagely in different letters through City on a Hill. And Mike has even seen fit on occasion to threaten me with arrest, and I've denounced that. And I think we're going to get into some of the issues behind this. The personalities really aren't that important. It's the principles and the concerns that both of us have. At least I don't want to speak for Mike. It's the concerns that I have in this situation, and that I would like to see him and the city council have, that I'm going to try to bring up to him. Maybe we should just go for the bullseye right now, and then we can kind of elaborate on it or dance around it, or give the history of it, and go into subsidiary issues. Or I have a tape which I'm going to be playing soon, which essentially is a tape of an address you made to the campers at the open-air shelter on Saturday, December, I think it was the 16th. And you came out to the field with Scott Kennedy, Councilmember Byers, Daryl Darling, head of the Community House, what I call the Trailers Not Trolls Project. There's been some dispute, $850,000 to $1.3 million project for 48 people that will supplant the open-air shelter.